WTOP, this is Jason.
Hey, it's Jay Leno. How you doing?
Hey, how are you, sir?
Tell a few jokes and try to make a living, you know? That's the game.
That's the life right there. All right, cool.
That's the life.
Hi, I'm WTOP Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we're here with the one and only Jay Leno, who's coming to the Kennedy Center on Friday, March 17th. Mr. Leno, it's an honor. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, young people. How you doing?
Now, aren't you still doing like 100-plus live comedy dates a year still?
Actually, about 210, something like that, yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, I was a stand-up comedian before I got the Tonight Show, and I would stand up hearing during the Tonight Show, and now the show's over, that's what I'm back to doing again. And it's fun. I actually like it. It's actually really good.
Coming full circle. Well, so speaking of which, what can we expect from this Kennedy Center show?
Some laughs, I guess. I mean, I'm not going to switch to modern interpretive dance, and I'm not going to give my political opinion, but we'll have plenty of jokes.
So it's not really a political comedy kind of a thing?
No, I think you can do some. I mean, I think all comedians are expected to do some political stuff one way or the other. I mean, I'll throw, you know, my attitude is when you're a comedian, it's like being a lawyer. It's not a matter of guilt or innocence. It's about doing comedy. Yeah. If the comedy happens to be one way or the other, that's fine. You know, I did a joke in Boston the other day, which almost got me killed, but it was a funny joke. I said, a liar, a cheater, and a murderer walk into a bar. Bartender says, hey, Patriots in town. Okay, well, that almost got me killed. But and I'm from Boston, but sorry, it's a funny joke. You got to do it.
Was that before or after Super Bowl number 5?
Oh, well, that was in and around.
Okay. Hey, you know, you got to go for the juggler sometimes, even if it gets you killed.
That's right, exactly.
Oh, that's great. Will this be your first time back at Kennedy Center since the Mark Twain Prize?
No, I think I had one show there a couple of years ago, and no, probably the second time. It's a great room. It's a Kennedy Center. Yeah.
Absolutely. I just missed you because the first one I covered was Eddie Murphy and then Bill Murray last year. I think you were in 2014. So any memories of that amazing night?
Well, I mean, it was great fun. It was exciting. And it was, you know, it was one of those things that, let's be honest, people usually campaign for awards like Emmys. You put yourself up for it, or right. Even the Golden Globes. You buy a lovely gift for a member of the foreign press. You know, whereas this is one of those things where they just call you up one day. And you don't really apply for it or ask for it or ask to even be considered for it. So that's why it was really cool.
Oh, absolutely. Every time I have, a Tonight Show host or a late night host on, I'm always curious about your approach to your interview style. We had we talked to Dick Cavett a couple years ago, and he always said that when he first started out, he would have sort of, you know, a list of questions, and he would be too, you know, too engrossed in those. It was like he had Elizabeth Taylor one time on, and she said, and I had a treasure chest, and I opened it, and you'll never believe what was in it. And then he said, oh, so what's your favorite color? And so he learned that you need to listen. But do you have any thoughts along those lines?
Well, what I do is I usually go in the dressing room before the show and talk to the guests. Now, there are people that think this is horrible and people think it's very good. I mean, other talk show guests. Some guests want to have everything totally spontaneous. For example, if I have a guest that just got busted for cocaine or whatever it is, something terrible, I will say to them, look, you're in the papers for this. I have to ask you about it. You can choose not to answer. Right. You can avoid the question if you want. But I've got to ask because that's my job. And they go, oh, okay. And then they're not sitting there on pins and needles waiting for the question and not paying attention to what you're saying to them. And plus, when you talk to them before the show, they realize, oh, okay, you're not out for blood here. You know, I never put myself ahead of the interview. To me, you should always be second to the guest. Sometimes that works for some people, sometimes it doesn't. The one thing it does assure you is that the guests will come back again because they felt they've been treated fairly,
right,
you know?
Right, right. So that's sort of your breaking the ice approach as opposed to just coming out and hitting them with the cameras rolling.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's nobody like... I mean, one of the best was, and the most famous one was Hugh Grant. Mm-hmm. You know, Hugh Grant showed up by himself, no publicist, no agent. I went in, and I was smiling, went into the room. I said, how you doing? He goes, fine, just let me have it. I said, okay. I said, look, you know, I got to ask you about it. He goes, oh, I know, don't worry about it. Okay, fine. And he had a real good sense of humor about it, and he was very funny. And it got us huge ratings, and it was great. I mean, the ones that you know, the celebrities that bring all their press people. I can remember one time we had, I can't remember her name. There was some ice skating star who had been in the Olympics who was like America's sweetheart. And like 10 years later, she's in Playboy magazine, naked, you know. So we get a call from Playboy and the press agent. Would we like to? And I said to somebody in the meeting, well, is this a good second or third guest? You know, America's sweetheart, she's now naked and Playboy. Okay, fine. All right, so we book her for second or third guest. I go in the dressing room to say hello. The agent says, Miss Lionel, come here. We are not discussing Playboy. We're not discussing. I said, great. Take your client and go home. I can get a comic here in 20 minutes. So that's not a problem. Thank you for coming. I'm sorry it didn't work out. Okay. I said, look, you called us. Your client is naked in Playboy magazine, okay? That's what we have to ask you about that. Don't say no
right
after you beg to be on. And okay, and it went fine, you know.
That's like having Tanya Harding on and not talking about all that mess. I mean, it's you got to talk about it.
Tanya Harding, how old are you? Tanya Harding. When are we having this conversation? 1996?
Exactly. Do you remember?
How about Reagan's trip to Pittsburgh? Wasn't that something?
Oh, yeah. Man, I remember it like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
But speaking of presidents, I mean, you've interviewed a fair share. Any of that sort of a little nervous?
No. I mean, I was fortunate enough to have dinner with every single president since Gerald Ford. And the only time I was nervous, the first time I ever did a Washington Correspondents' Dinner, I did it with Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm backstage in that kind of green room thing, and I see this general come in with all the medals, and he's looking, and I goes, hey, you, are you the comedian? Come over here. He says, this is my commander-in-chief. Do you understand that? You don't make fun of him. You don't denigrate him. He is the leader of the free world, and he's poking me while he's doing all this, you know?
Yeah.
And I said, yes, sir, thank you. And then he leaves, and I go, oh, man. Then George Shultz comes in, and George has had a couple of drinks. He goes, well, no, come here. When you get out there, nail Ronnie. Nail his ass to the wall. And he's laughing, and he slapped me on the back, you know. And I said, are you sure? I said, that general goes, screw him. He works for me. Don't worry about that. Just go out there and let him have it, you know. And I'm like, so now I go, what do I do? And now I'm like, I don't know what to do. Because, I mean, it was just a weird sort of situation.
Yeah.
But I remember the opening joke was, I want to congratulate Nancy Reagan for winning the Humanitarian of the Year Award. I'm glad she beat out that conniving little bitch, Mother Teresa. I'm not, and I've got to laugh.
Oh, that's priceless. Any non-presidents that you sort of pinch yourself?
Almost all the guests were non-presidents.
Exactly.
But question?
No, yeah, but I was saying any of the, you know, let's say like fellow showbiz folks you got to talk to, like Dick Cavett was Groucho Marx, you know, that was his childhood hero. Anyone like that for you that you grew up watching and then, oh my God, here they are.
Oh, gosh. Boy, there are a lot of those. But, you know, Sean Connery was kind of cool. Because when you're a kid, you know, when you're 14 when Goldfinger came out, you know, sort of called, oh, gee. You know, he has that sort of it. He was always kind of a cool guy. Sean Connery was kind of cool. I mean, there was an awful lot. I mean, they sort of escaped me now. I mean, just Johnny Carson, obviously. That was pretty impressive. You know, all the big comics in my era, Rickles, Newhart, you know, that was an amazing time.
Absolutely. You mentioned Carson. Take us back to your first appearance. I think it was in 1977?
Right. Well, you know, there's a whole process to it. You know, Johnny would first they send scouts in to see you, and then Johnny came in to see me once, and he gave me some good advice. He said, he pulled me aside. He said, you know, you're a good performer, but you need a little stronger material. And he said to me, what you should do is you should write your jokes out and read them to people first. You know, if the joke gets a laugh, then you know you got a solid joke. Then add your performance to it. He said, if you take a weak joke and really sell it hard, you'll still get a laugh, but it won't be a solid laugh. So you want a joke that works on two fronts. It works if you say it in the dullest, most boring way possible. And that means it'll really work when you put a little body English into it and you sell it. And that was the best advice I ever got, and that was really true.
Oh, that's great. And then so you started being a regular substitute in 87, take over in 92. What was it like sitting down in that chair, being, you know, saying, wow, I am officially Carson's official full-time replacement now? Do you remember that very first show where
it
was just you?
Well, I don't think I ever said to people, I am officially, because that's something you more do for third world dictators and things. But it was, you know, you're only as good as your last show. Mm-hmm. And if you hosted one night and it didn't go well, ooh, boy, they're going to watch that next show pretty carefully. If that one doesn't go well, well, then you're not the official, as you say, guest host anymore. Right. So you're sort of on pins and needles all the time. It's never anything you take for granted.
Yeah. And speaking of you're only as good as your last show, I'll never forget the last one you did when you had Billy Crystal and Garth Brooks on. Why was it important to have those two on your send-off?
Oh, you know, Garth and Billy, I've known since the first days of show business for me, so that was kind of fun. I mean, Billy and I go way back to the 70s, mm-hmm. you know. And, of course, Garth, you know, in the early 90s when he started. So, yeah, that was great fun.
Absolutely. You have friends in high places, for sure. Do you miss it? Do you miss doing The Tonight Show?
Well, yes and no. I mean, at some point you say, you know, when you're 40 and you're talking to the 26-year-old supermodel, it's sexy. When you're 66, you're the creepy old guy, okay? You know, I mean, at some point I shouldn't have to know all of Jay-Z's music, you know?
Right.
I mean, when you're my age, you're pretending to, well, you know, Tupac once told me, you just sound ridiculous, okay? So you have to know when to step aside. You can only live in the time that you live in. And during the time, you know, I was lucky. I did it at a time when Clinton was horny and Bush was dumb, and it was just easy. You know, I mean, the Clinton thing was the golden age of comedy. Most people don't know anything about Syria. They don't understand the Middle East.
Right.
But by golly, everybody knows somebody like Bill, you
right,
know,
right.
You know, and that's why you could, the jokes again, you know, the best comedy, we Americans will accept anything except hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Because we're very forgiving. People can do the most harm. I remember once Charlie Sheen was on Tonight Show, and I asked him a question. Charlie Sheen said, you know, I just like hookers and cocaine, and he only applauded. And I go, why are you applauding? They're applauding because he was so honest, not because they weren't applauding hookers and cocaine. They're applauding the fact that, hey, at least the guy's being honest, you know?
I mean,
whether it's Jimmy Swaggart or whoever it might be, there's nothing funnier than, you know, I did not have sex with that woman. That's the greatest line ever. I mean, what's funnier than that?
That's great. You truly were, you know, the captain of the ship during some amazing times with plenty of material.
it was great fun.
Absolutely. And then passing the torch to Fallon. I know you popped on his show and did a guest thing every now and then. What do you make of his, you know, stewardship of the great legacy of that show?
Oh, he's doing it. You know, he's probably closer to Johnny in demeanor than almost anybody. You know, he's young, he's good looking, he can play an instrument, he can sort of move and dance, you know. You know, so Letterman or I dance around, it just didn't happen, you know. I think Jimmy does a great job. He brings another whole dimension to the show. I mean, when we did this show, the focus was always on the monologue. Now the focus is on, you know, viral videos and getting those things out and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. You mentioned Letterman. What was his sort of gift? What did he bring to the comedy world? I know, I hate when people try to pit entertainers against each other, whether it's, you know, Letterman or back and forth with, you know.
Well, the interesting thing was when we started, we all sort of started together.
Right.
And the first time I saw Letterman, I thought he was a brilliant wordsmith. He could stand on stage and weave words in an interesting way. I remember one of his early bits was about, he talked about working at a local TV station and the, you know, the editorials the manager would always do. And one of the subjects is, we here at KW, whatever it is, are diametrically opposed to the use of orphans as yardage markers on public golf courses. And I thought the way he wove those elements all together was really funny. And I walked up to him and I introduced myself. You know, I said, oh man, that's really great. And then he watched me perform and he said to me, how can you be so loose up there? I mean, just kind of loud and yelling at you. He said, I could never. Okay, so I think he took from me maybe some performing ability and confidence. And I took from him, oh, you know, just think about what you say a little more carefully and read those phrases and words together. So it was sort of a mutual admiration deal, you know?
Absolutely. And to have you guys, you know, on different channels in the same time slot, I mean, I think it's like a rising tide raises all boats. I really think you guys kind of upped each other's game. And so we were blessed to have you both on the air for as long as we did. I mean,
well, that's very kind. Well, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. What about, speaking of the things we got to ask you, like you said earlier, I mean, what about the whole Conan deal? I mean, what was his gift to comedy? I only want to talk positive stuff. what was so great? You know, what was his tribute?
Conan's very good. Yeah. Conan's excellent. Yeah. I mean, when Conan first came on, I remember they had him literally on a week-to-week. And I went to the network and said, you know, the guys can't go week-to-week. Nobody can live like that. So I promoted him every night after the show. And, you know, what happens is basically business. It's just business. It really comes down to everybody's trying to, who are you going to make more money with, this guy or go with this guy? And right. I think I was someone who always believed, I never liked pay or play. By that I mean there are people who have contracts. If they don't use you, then they got to pay you the money.
Yeah.
Well, I always made sure my contract was pay and play. If you're going to use me, you have to play me, and you have to pay me.
Right, right.
So when they decided to switch off, my contract said I had 5 years left. Okay, and over the course of that 5 years, Craig Ferguson came on. He went opposite Conan on CBS, and his thing was climbing. And, you know, NBC was like, are we making the right deal here? And you know, they tried to have both. And for a while they did, and it worked fine. But when it fell apart, boy, it fell apart terribly. I don't blame Conan. I don't know. It's a business decision. You know, I would read things constantly about how, okay, Lennon, you gave the show to Conan, then you demanded it back, and they had to give it to you. I mean, they had to give it to me. No, this is TV. They don't have to give you anything. It's all a business decision, and that's what it was. I mean, it's too bad. You know, I think I lost a friend at the time, and so did he.
Yeah, well, like you said, it's showbiz, and I just think back of all those great years where you guys were the 1-2 punch. You would kill it in Tonight's Show, and then he would follow you up with those, you know, Triumph the Comic Dog, and just all that great stuff. So,
It was great fun.
Yeah. So thanks to all that you've done with that. And then I think recently I saw you. What have you been up to lately? I think I saw you on a Netflix show about it's all about different design. The name's escaping me, but you were on with talking cars. It's a Netflix series.
I didn't. You know, someone else mentioned it to me. I think I was on there, but I didn't know about it. But, I mean, I do Jay Leno's Garage on CNBC, but, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was a great episode, even though you don't remember doing it. But I do.
I mean, you know, sometimes you do it for one thing and it shows up somewhere else.
I think that's
what this was a case of, yeah.
I gotcha. But the one I did enjoy was you doing Comedians in Cars with Jerry.
Yeah, that was great fun. Jerry's one of my closest friends, one of my oldest friends, so that was really fun.
Absolutely. When did you get into cars? What started that whole obsession with you?
Well, I grew up in a rural area in Massachusetts. You know, we couldn't go places virtually. We had to go places in reality, you know, so that was a totally different thing right there. So cars were really your only way out, you know. I lived in a little house. We had one bathroom. We had one phone in the kitchen. So if you try to talk to a girl, your mother's always within 10 feet. What are you saying? Who are you talking with? It's 9 o'clock at night. And whenever I called at 9 o'clock at night, my father would go, only hoodlums are up after 9 o'clock at night. You know, he would only hoodlums talk on the phone at midnight. You know, my father, hilarious.
Yeah, I thought it was nothing good happens after midnight, but for your parents it was 9 o'clock.
Yeah, well, they were always the 3 hours behind. Yeah,
yeah, it's like the time zone thing or something. Awesome. Well, bringing it full circle, you've been more than generous with your time. You know, why should we come out at Kennedy Center? What final pitch?
Well, there's just I think there's a lot of humor. I think you'll enjoy it. A lot of funny stories and a lot of grown up stories. It's a fairly clean show. I don't work dirty. That doesn't mean I'm making balloon animals, but I think you can talk about adult subjects in a adult way. So I hope people come by and check it out.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mr. Jay Leno. It's an honor. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thank you.